Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson. And today, author Laura Bruno is here to talk about her new book, If I Only Had a Brain Injury, a traumatic brain injury survivor and life coach's guide to chronic fatigue, concussion, Lyme disease, migraine, or other medical mystery. After completing a master's degree in English at the University of Chicago, Laura Bruno spent 2 years in the corporate world. On May 19, 1998, just a few months before beginning her PhD program, a seemingly minor car accident destroyed the life she knew. Traumatic brain injury replaced Laura's sales career and graduate school fellowship. On the eve of pursuing doctoral studies in English literature, she could no longer read without debilitating migraine headaches. Her IQ dropped almost 50 points. She had almost constant vertigo and could not tolerate fluorescent lights or background noises. Healthy and energetic one day, Laura could suddenly no longer function and spent the next 6 years chasing recovery. She looked exactly the same, but inside everything had become terrifying and confusing. Years of misdiagnoses forced her to find alternative means of getting well. And now a fully recovered writer, teacher, and intuitive life coach, Laura enjoys a very busy practice. From a woman once considered permanently disabled, her new book, If I Only Had a Brain Injury, is itself a testament to the incredible resilience of the human brain and spirit. And I am just so very happy to have Laura here on the program today. So welcome and thank you so much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Oh, well, so congratulations on your book and really your recovery. This was quite a journey for you and continues to be.
Yeah, it really does, and thank you.
So why did you decide to actually write about all of your experiences and your healing journey and put it into a book?
Well, initially, I was just writing to get some things off my chest for my own recovery, and I did have a sense that I would eventually write a book, but I didn't realize that the book I was working on was the one I would eventually publish. And what happened was that I continued to encounter other survivors of either brain injury or Lyme disease or chronic fatigue syndrome, and they were literally asking me, hey, when is your book coming out? We want to know exactly how you healed, not just some general things. We want specific steps.
Mm.
And that's when I realized that I really needed to actually put it out there.
That there was a need for it. Is there not a lot of books out there that are passing on this kind of information?
Well, what I found in my own research was that at the time of my injury, there were not that many books out there, and I couldn't read, so it wasn't very helpful even what was out there.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I've noticed through the intuitive work that I've done with a lot of people that have these types of injuries and illnesses is that there's a pretty large spiritual component in terms of really discovering who they really are, and that a lot of times the illness or injury is really more like a nudge from the universe to say, hey, you're not quite on your path.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was not really in a lot of the very good books that are out there was a really kind of a step-by-step guide of how do you deal with the spiritual and emotional components of these illnesses and injuries, and that's a really important part.
How open are you finding people to this idea that there is a spiritual component to it?
I found people to be very, very open, especially because a lot of the people, I'll take brain injury as an example, most of the people that I end up doing work with that have brain injuries end up telling me, you know, I'm really intuitive,
mm-hmm.
or I had these spiritual experiences after my head injury, or I had a near-death experience. And so it's right from the get-go with these injuries, there is a very obvious spiritual component.
Isn't that interesting? So with you're a medical intuitive. So was it your accident and this injury that spurred on your intuitive abilities, or did you have them before as well?
I was always very intuitive, but I was also always very rational.
Mm-hmm.
And I was headed down an academic track where I was going to get a PhD in English literature. And so I didn't really use my intuition that much. It was there. It was actually kind of annoying for me that it would pop up so much. After I had my accident, I lost my rational side for, depending on who you talk with, between 3 and 4 years.
Wow. So where is that rational side today?
It came back in full.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. So tell us a little bit about your accident. What life was like for you in the days, months, and few years after the accident as well?
Well, I was stopped at a red light near White Plains, New York. I was on a business trip, and I remember seeing the light turn green, but there were two cars ahead of me. And all I really remember is that I heard someone just really squealing on their brakes, and I heard a loud crash, and I thought, whoa, somebody really got it.
You didn't know it was you?
No, then I woke up, and I was like, oh, where am I? I thought I fell asleep in my car.
Oh, wow.
So I really couldn't figure out what was happening. The person that hit me ended up having to get out my insurance information because I couldn't figure out what she was asking me for. And I did drive home from the accident, which in retrospect was a very big mistake. But I've found is very common with people that have brain injuries just to leave the scene of the accident. You just want to get home to something familiar.
Oh, safe, right. Why didn't they get an ambulance for you? I'm surprised that wasn't called for by the police or something.
Well, there was a lot of confusion because I was on an entrance ramp, or I thought I was on an entrance ramp to a highway, and I guess I wasn't quite on the entrance ramp, and depending on whether I was on it or not, depended on whether they called local police or state police. So by the time the right police got there, it had been over an hour since the accident. I was in a suit. I was really, really hot, and I just really wanted to go home.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept asking me, are you sure you don't want to go to the hospital? And when you have a head injury, you don't really realize that your cognition isn't working right. That's kind of a sign of improvement if you actually recognize that you're having problems. So for me, all I noticed was that my neck was just hurting so badly, and all I could think about was getting home.
So now the days after, how did your symptoms progressively get worse?
Well, the next day, I ended up getting to my parents' house somehow when I drove home. I didn't quite make it all the way home. I just sort of found myself in my parents' driveway.
Laura, that's crazy.
Yeah. And I, in the past, I had fainted because of having hypoglycemia. And so when I came to their house and I was just acting really weird, they thought, oh, well, maybe she just is really, really hungry. She's had an accident. She needs to eat. And so we went out to eat. And I noticed at the time that I really couldn't read the menu at all. But I didn't want to mention that to anyone because it was kind of embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of bluffed my way through and said, oh, I'll have fish. And so my dad ordered me food, but I couldn't eat it. I felt really, really nauseated. And I've found this is true with most people that have had brain injuries, that you don't really want people to know that you're not right. And so for the first several weeks, I really was kind of trying to cover up that things weren't working.
Why is that, do you think? Is that just a self-protection sort of impulse?
I think it's actually a natural impulse. I mean, if you look at animals in the wild, small birds or rabbits or anything that's feeling vulnerable, they will usually hide their injuries because predators can come attack them more easily if they look weak or wounded.
Mm.
And my guess is that it's just kind of a carryover that for humans, your brain is sort of your most valuable part. And so if it suddenly isn't working, you don't want people to know that.
Right. So it's interesting. That's so interesting. So were you always determined to recovery from this injury right from the get-go?
Oh, yeah. When I first went to a doctor the day following the accident, he said, well, you have a moderate concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, that's no problem. I've had brain, concussions before. And he was like, uh-oh, that makes this more serious because they can be cumulative. And he said, this could take you 6 to 8 weeks to recover from. And I just thought he was being a big alarmist and said, there's no way it's going to take me that long to recover. Obviously it did.
Mm-hmm.
But from the very beginning, it's one of the reasons that it was actually a blessing that I didn't know what was wrong with me. I kept thinking that recovery was right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I had doctors telling me that I was permanently disabled or that I might never read again, I never really fully accepted that that was true.
Yeah, yeah. That's so interesting, because then that gave you the drive to persevere through the entire recovery process, I imagine.
Yes. Yeah, if I had known that it was going to take me 6 years to have a full recovery,
yeah.
It might have been a little more difficult to do that.
And it probably would have taken you longer.
It might have, but I was really determined to get well. I really did not like being injured. I had some incredible experiences, and I wouldn't trade the experience, but it was not pleasant to have a migraine. I had the first migraine that lasted for 16 months.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So what was the traditional medicine approach? Like, what were your doctors, were they prescribing medication for you? What was the treatment from them?
Well, one doctor prescribed two things. He prescribed migraine medication for me, and I had to go through a series of different types of migraine medicines because I kept becoming allergic to all of them. I would wake up and my whole face would be swollen up from taking various types of migraine drugs, and I had to take a lot of them because they didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also prescribed some kind of muscle relaxant because I had a pretty severe neck injury from this. And fortunately, I don't know if it was my medical intuition or if it was just a funny feeling, but I took one of the pills and thought, I don't feel right taking this. And I found out about 8 weeks later that all three or four people had had kidney failure from taking this muscle relaxant.
That's terrible. I mean, you really have to watch with some of these prescriptions that they're prescribing. So now, what about the alternative therapies? What kind of gave you that bump into exploring alternative means of treatment?
Well, I got sort of shopped around to a bunch of different doctors because all of my symptoms were very unusual, as is often the case with people that have brain injuries or any other type of medical mystery, where the symptoms present in kind of a chaotic manner, and you treat one and then another one appears, and that was kind of the case with me. People would ask me, do you have double vision? And I would always answer no, because I wasn't seeing two of something. But in the doctor's defense, if I had told them I had double vision, I probably would have received proper medical treatment earlier. It's just in my mind, my vision was very messed up, but I wasn't actually seeing two of things. So by the time I found someone who is a vestibular expert in the Philadelphia area, he tested me for all kinds of vertigo problems and problems with my inner ear and every kind of vestibular issue that you could have, and he said, you're not having double vision, but you do have a problem with your vision, and there is treatment for it, but not around here. You're going to need to go to one of these five cities. And it happened that one of the cities was in Seattle, and I knew someone there that I could stay with, because at that point it was pretty clear to everyone that I really couldn't just be on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Seattle, and this doctor was actually more on the alternative end. And he did craniosacral therapy. He also did a lot with herbs and with visual therapy, and that's really how I started to recover.
How quick did you start to notice a recovery in a positive direction after you started the alternative therapies?
Very, very quickly, actually. I had the first full relief from a migraine headache in, I think it was after one or two sessions working with this guy.
With the craniosacral?
Mm-hmm. Well, craniosacral, and he had me on a lot of herbs.
Okay, okay. Now, how did the herbs change and influence your recovery? I think that listeners would be interested to know that, because you can, I don't know, it would be pretty understandable that craniosacral would start shifting the brain tissue and you know, what craniosacral does, but how do the herbs help?
Well, one of the things that he noticed was that my brain was really just misfiring. One of the things that happens to people that have brain injuries is that you really get overloaded. And I've since learned that part of that cause is because most people that have brain injuries have a problem with their vision. And it may not be double vision, but it's not correct vision. It's called binocular dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And because we take in so much information through our eyes, even with our eyes closed, we take in a lot of information about our environment through our eyelids. if you're having a binocular dysfunction where one eye is telling your brain one thing and the other eye is telling another thing, then you're spending a huge amount of energy just trying to get through life. And so if you start throwing extra stimuli there, then it's like if someone were walking on a tightrope and someone started shaking the tightrope and started, you know, blaring music through a megaphone and started talking to the person, then it's like everything is distracting you when all you're trying to do is just keep your balance so that you can just keep going.
Wow. Overload.
So So by the time that I got to this doctor in Seattle, my system had been on overload for about, almost 16 months. And a lot of the herbs that he gave me were ones that start to calm down your system. He also put me on ginger root, which really helps with nausea. And what was the other one? He had me on Bicol Skullcap, which helps to detoxify the liver and also helps you to sleep better.
Mm-hmm.
And he would change the herbs up every couple weeks that I treated with him. But they really, I noticed a huge difference when I started on those.
That's fantastic. Now, I understand. I mean, you have some statistics here that are staggering. 2 million Americans suffer from traumatic brain injury. I mean,
yes.
That is profound. And I'd like you to maybe talk a little to that and how your coaching work is kind of waking you up to this. I don't know. This is almost like an epidemic, really, in our country, you know, because you are seeing this more and more in the work that you're doing as well, and people don't even know that they have had brain injury.
Yes, that's one of the scary things, is that those are the statistics that are reported. And in the work that I do, I don't only coach people that have brain injuries. And in fact, usually people contact me and they never have any idea that they had a brain injury, and it just ends up coming up through the coaching that they realize, oh, does it count that I was in a coma for 3 days when I was 7? Well, yes, I have this brain injury. But a lot of times, again, because people tend to try to cover up things that aren't working, you'll find very, very bright people who had injuries when they were children, or who had just sort of a slight bump on the head, didn't really think too much of it, find that emotionally or physically they're much more tired, or the brain is very adaptable. And so if you've only had one or two of these kind of little bumps, then a lot of times you don't notice it because there's other neuropathways to work with. It's when people start having lots of little brain injuries, or they have a really big one where a lot of the pathways are shut down, you start getting things like obsessive compulsive disorder, or issues where people just have to do things their way. And they may be really, really bright people, but they just don't really function in typical society.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found in the coaching is that it's a two-part process. One is helping them to find, okay, what is it that you're really here to do? Because maybe it's not just to be a quote-unquote normal person in society. Maybe you're an artist. Maybe you're a creator. Maybe you're some kind of a leader. Let's explore that. But the flip side of that is also looking at, okay, let's look at these personality quirks that you think you have, and let's see if some of them aren't just residuals from an injury or an illness that you had before. Try some of these techniques. And 9 out of 10 times, a lot of things that people thought were really annoying personality quirks start to disappear.
Isn't that amazing? So what are some of these techniques? And these are included in your book, I'm imagining.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book actually includes 52 healing hints. Originally, when I thought of writing the book, I was only going to write just a really short primer that had 52 hints in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continued to grow, but the original 52 hints are still there. And they range anywhere from things like tricraniosacral therapy, consult a behavioral optometrist or a neurooptometrist, to other things like really detailed exercises on how to meditate, how to really calm down your neurological system that's on overload all the time. Ways to really look into what it is that you really are passionate about. Why do you feel that you're here? If nobody was going to judge you for it, what would you be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot in there about not judging yourself and really allowing yourself to unfold naturally.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I love about your book and your message is that there you are looking to a deeper meaning for these kinds of injuries and that there really is a gift to be found.
Yes.
For people.
That's something that I've noticed just in my medical intuitive work. A lot of times people will come to me and they'll say, how can I ever trust my body again? My body has betrayed me.
Mm.
And I always tell people your body never betrays you. Your body is so loving and supportive of your soul's growth that your body will do anything in order to help you really get the message and really move forward and be all that you are. So a lot of times these injuries are very obvious that there's a much bigger meaning.
And now, so you're tying this in also with other, what you term medical mystery type of illness or injury or disease. You know, there's the chronic fatigue, the Lyme disease, migraine, fibromyalgia. So what is the commonality that you're seeing with all of these disorders? Why did you decide to bring them all together for this book and not just focus on the brain injury?
Well, originally I was only thinking about brain injury, and the meditation teacher Sally Kempton interviewed me in 2003 for an article in Yoga Journal.
Mm-hmm. I read that.
Back.
Yeah, it's a great article.
Well, what happened after she interviewed me and after the article appeared about 6 months later, all these people started emailing her wanting to connect with me, and so she started forwarding their emails to me. And it was kind of surprising to me in that maybe only 25% of the people that contacted her had just brain injury. A lot of the people were writing and saying, oh, I have MS, and Laura's story could have been my story. Or, oh, I have fibromyalgia, and I know exactly what you mean. I have terrible brain fog, and I was living a completely, you know, very focused and financially beneficial life, and then all of a sudden I got sick and everything just disappeared. And I started hearing from so many people with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome that I thought, wow, there really is a connection. And then my husband got Lyme disease and ended up having most of the symptoms that I had, only it was from a completely different cause. And that was a real eye-opener.
No kidding. So are we seeing medical mystery type of illness like this happening in other countries? Or I mean, it just seems to me like we're having a prevalence of it here in America.
Well, we're definitely having a prevalence here in America, but there are problems with brain injuries in other countries, obviously. I mean, you
sure.
can get a brain injury wherever you are.
Sure. I'm thinking more like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, Lyme disease.
I received quite a few emails from people in England that had chronic fatigue syndrome.
Mm.
And Lyme disease is just a huge problem in Europe, particularly, and I can't remember if it's Romania or Bulgaria, but
really?
it's a huge, huge epidemic.
Why do you think we're seeing this now in these times?
There's all kinds of theories on that.
Mm.
I mean, the theories range from we don't have enough salt in our diets that kills the bacteria to genetically modified food that we're not able to take in as many nutrients and really fight off disease as well, to modified organisms from, you know, escaped biological warfare. I don't really know why it's happening, but it definitely is.
How important was changing up your diet and your nutrition in your recovery and healing?
I found that it was very important, but it was counterintuitive in the beginning. I was mostly vegetarian, and I was known among my friends as pretty much of a health nut before I had the accident. And immediately after the accident, I think because I was just spinning so much, I had terrible vertigo. All I wanted to eat was steak.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had 3 steaks and like 5 vanilla milkshakes the first week of my injury because it was the only thing that would make me feel solid. So gradually over time, my diet shifted, and now I'm way more vegetarian than I was before the injury.
Mm.
I actually eat all raw vegan foods and mostly organic. which gives you phenomenal energy, but I would not have been able to do that immediately after the accident. I literally would have thought I would just float away.
Isn't that interesting? So it was more grounding for you. Obviously, your body really, it needed that more dense food.
I feel like it did. If I had known other ways of grounding myself, that probably would not have been the case. But at the time of my accident, the only way that I knew how to ground myself was by eating food. And so the heavier the food, the better. And I would just feel like, okay, now I can sit still on this couch. It's not going to make the room spin.
Mm-hmm. God.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is the priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Laura Bruno, author of If I Only Had a Brain Injury. You can find out more about Laura through her website, ifionlyhadabraininjury.com. So I've heard you say, or I read somewhere, and you said a statement I found so interesting, and it was that there is an intrinsic connection between the neurological system and our spirituality. And I love that. I've heard it said somewhere else that the nervous system is the temple of our consciousness as well. So it kind of tweaked that in me, and I'd love for you to explain how you feel the neurologic system and our spirituality are connected.
Well, from an Eastern tradition, we have over 5,000 years worth of writings about what's called the chakra system, which are energy centers that are traditionally going up the spine. And so you've got all the nerves in the spinal column. And traditionally we have 7, although actually we have a lot more than that. And those are energy centers that yogis and rishis have talked about for just, you know, thousands of years. And the original intent of practices like yoga and meditation was to find ways of balancing the chakras so that we would really be in alignment. And the idea is that when you are in a state of peace and stillness, that you're much more able to have a really clear connection with God or spirit or whatever your definition is of your spirituality. But what I find very interesting is that for years that was considered very, very alternative. And actually, traditional medicine is starting to support these ideas. There have been some studies that are in process, and some of which I believe have been completed, about the chakra system and which endocrine glands are associated with which areas of the body. And they found that, in fact, some of the endocrine glands, when they're out of balance, will cause the very same emotional type symptoms and physical symptoms that are traditionally associated with that chakra. And they've been doing quite a few studies on meditation, and they've actually found that there are spiritual locations in the brain, and that when you stimulate or take away stimulation from certain areas of the brain, you can do away with visual spatial consciousness, which results in a greater feeling of oneness and connection with the universe. And I think there's just going to be more and more of that confirmation as science really starts exploring these connections.
I think that's fantastic. So what kind of what chakra work did you do in particular for your brain injury?
Well, brain injury and really any of these medical mystery type illnesses, they tend to happen to people that were either already very, very spiritual but didn't have a context in their lives in which to fit that new awakening, or who always had an interest in it but maybe wanted to awaken faster than their life would allow. And I'm not saying that there's not a physical component to these illnesses and injuries, because there most certainly is. But the connection is really that in order to heal, I believe people really do need to get in touch with that part of themselves. It doesn't mean that they need to go out and become a born-again Christian, or they need to become a Hindu. It's not about organized religion. It's about really getting in touch with that higher part of who they are, the essence of who they are, and really bringing some of that magic back into their lives.
Beautiful. So do you think then, Laura, that if someone had a brain injury or some sort of illness, I guess more, this would be more for the brain injury, when they were younger, that there is a possibility as they're more mature to go do some of the treatment, do some of the therapies that you lay down in your book, and then actually recover at that point?
Actually, there can be recovery way down the line. In fact, there's a testimonial from a guy that read my book, and it's on Amazon, and he said he didn't even realize that he had had brain injuries until he read this book. And as he was reading the book, he went down and wrote down every time that he had hit his head, and he realized that he had had 21 incidents.
Wow.
Of pretty hard bangs to the head. He was a football player who had had some minor concussions. He had done a lot of, I don't remember if it was water skiing or what, but anyway, he's since contacted me since writing the testimonial, and he tried some of the techniques in the book and found that some of these things that he just thought were something that he had to accept about his life were starting to disappear, and some of these injuries were from 20 years ago.
That is incredible. That's incredible. Now, you use the, I find this interesting, the Wizard of Oz story as a tie-in for your book, as a metaphor. So tell us how that came about.
Well, it was when I was at Northwestern, I was going to get my PhD from Northwestern University. And after my accident, I had to defer my enrollment for a year. And I decided I was just going to try it. And so I went. I only lasted for about 3 weeks in class because I just, even though I got to a point where I could clear the print and not have it swim all over the page, what I didn't realize was that I was not going to have any recollection of any book that I had read.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had to, like, put notes in my book to say, you read this one, because otherwise I would just pick it up and read it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up having to drop out after 3 weeks. It was just way too much with the lights and everything.
Yeah.
But they were so wonderful to me at Northwestern. The professors, the students really kind of rallied around me. And when they would have events that were going to be within an environment that I could tolerate, as in it didn't have fluorescent lights and it wasn't going to be very, very noisy, they would invite me. And there was a holiday party at a professor's house, and they had been doing a project on Salman Rushdie's interpretation of The Wizard of Oz, and they had to watch The Wizard of Oz in preparation for the class. And so the teacher invited me to come to this, and I really shocked myself, because normally I would have just been very quiet and overwhelmed in a crowd of a bunch of students, but I found that I had a lot to say about The Wizard of Oz as a process of healing, and that everybody in the party was very interested in it. And so that was really the beginning of this book, kind of realizing that, wow, Dorothy has a brain injury, and Dorothy goes through this long journey, but it could also be looked at as a healing mythological journey.
I think that's great. I wonder if the original author had any inkling of that whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know. He certainly was a brilliant man, and he certainly did a lot of different types of revisions on The Wizard of Oz and that whole series, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. So how has the injury really influenced your medical intuitive work? I find that the that kind of work. Extremely fascinating. If you want to maybe go into that a little bit for listeners who may not be that familiar with it.
Okay, sure. Well, the most famous medical intuitive and the person that sort of coined the phrase is Carolyn Mace, and her name's pronounced Mace, but it's spelled M-Y-S-S, and she wrote Anatomy of the Spirit. She's written tons of bestsellers, so this is a concept that's becoming more mainstream, although it's been around for probably since the beginning of mankind,
yeah.
Because shamans would use versions of medical intuition to help heal their people in their tribe. And what I found was that even as a child, I would have sort of an uncanny knowing of what was going on in someone's body. And it was kind of spooky to a lot of people, so I kept it very quiet. But I would never be surprised if somebody had cancer or something. I would probably have mentioned the week before, oh, that person, you know, might get cancer or something. And when you're a child and people sort of react to you saying those things, you learn to keep that quiet. At least I did.
Mm-hmm.
But people continued to ask me for that kind of advice. It was like I sent out a radar or something, and people just knew that I could do that. When I was at the University of Chicago getting my master's degree, I would be walking to class, and people would come up to me and just start sharing their whole life story and saying, you know, I don't even know why I'm telling you this, but I know that you can help me. What should I be doing? Or is there something I can take? Or, you know, do I need to have a different path in life? And these were total strangers.
Wow.
Yeah. And what I found was that what I would tell them, they'd end up coming back and talking to me a couple weeks later and just thanking me profusely that, oh, wow, this really changed my life. And again, it was very embarrassing. I just wanted to be a professor. I didn't want to be standing out. I didn't want to look strange or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And after the accident, I didn't have the rational side that was telling me, no, 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 that, you know, that you can't know this about someone. This is none of your business. And I was still very shy about it, but I would get these incredible migraines. The first one lasted for 16 months. It never went away. But if I would have a medical intuitive hit on someone, it would get really, really, really intense. Like my head would be ready to explode. And I would just be wanting to do anything to get rid of the pain. And oftentimes what would come to me is, you know, call this person, tell them to go to the doctor and get this thing checked.
Wow.
And I would resist it. And finally, the pain would be so much that I would call the person and say, you know, you might want to get your thyroid checked or do this or do that. And then the pain would dissipate. And they would usually follow up and end up calling me back and going, I don't know how you knew that about me, but you know, you were right, thanks. My thyroid medication was way off.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so it was interesting.
Do you ever feel that that's a burden, having that ability?
Not anymore, but I certainly did for most of my life. I really didn't want to know those kinds of things about people.
I bet.
Now I love it because I've seen how people can really take control of their own health and really take responsibility for all the different levels of healing. And I realize that it really is a gift.
Yeah, and it is a gift. And when you're standing in that power and you're expressing your gift to the world, I think that, you know, you're in tune with a deeper part of yourself. So how could you not be enjoying it?
Yeah, there's so many incredible stories. And what I've found is that a lot more people are medical intuitive than realize that fact. So now I actually teach classes for people, and I found, wow, not everybody resists this. There's actually some people that really want to learn how to be more in tune. And so that's been really eye-opening as well.
Isn't that interesting? So with the people that are coming to your workshops, do a lot of them have a background with some sort of medical mystery like this or brain injury? Are you finding that?
I am finding that. Sometimes for shock value, I'll say in a medical intuitive class, well, every single person in this class has the brain injury or chronic fatigue profile. And people will be like, what? How can you say that about me? And then we'll go around the classroom, and sure enough, a bunch of the people people will have had Lyme disease or chronic fatigue syndrome, and then as people are talking about it, they'll be like, oh, you know, I cracked my skull open when I was 2. Does that count?
Oh.
Or, oh, I did this, and then I started becoming psychic afterwards. Does that, you think that's related? And so, yeah, I find that there's a very high correlation for people that are interested in really intuitive practices who have had these types of illnesses or injuries.
Mm-hmm. Now, your appendices in the book include essays and interviews of survivors and caregivers, and I think that there are some medical professionals that have done some write-ups for your for that section as well?
Yes, I have a section, it's called Glinda's Secrets, and it's a special section for treatment providers written by other treatment providers. Because one of the things that I found in my recovery was that my traditional doctors really wanted to help. I mean, they were very open to wanting to help me in whatever ways they knew, but there's just not a lot of knowledge about brain injury, and particularly minor brain injury, and there's never really a minor brain injury because the effects are always major. But if someone's in a coma or someone had their skull fractured, there's a lot of acute type of stuff that can be done for them. But when someone looks exactly the same, they haven't actually cracked their skull open, then it really takes a lot of awareness on treatment providers' parts to even recognize the symptoms of brain injury. And so what I found in really exploring this topic was that there are some real experts out there, and a lot of them have studied the brain and the neurological system very thoroughly, and it's kind of a matter of connecting them with people that are really willing to learn and just don't know where to look for that information.
Mm-hmm. You have, I think Dana Reeves did a write-up in there as well?
Yes, actually, it's a letter from her website, but when I first read it years ago, it was a letter to caregivers, and I just thought, wow, that she says it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote to her, and this was before she died, and actually got permission to include that letter to other caregivers, because I found in helping my husband with Lyme disease that it's difficult to be a caregiver, and it's not just like, oh, I have to do all these things for someone else. It's really hard to watch someone that you love really suffering and not knowing how to handle it. And I found that a number of people that were going to contribute to the book ended up getting really serious health issues of their own.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one woman ended up dying of breast cancer, and she had nursed her husband through brain cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought there's a real need to support the caregivers because it's very stressful, but also your life is going to change too. If you're a caregiver and the person that you're close to is going through all of these radical changes physically, emotionally, spiritually, mentally, then there's no way that being in the proximity to that type of change, you're not being nudged along to make your own changes.
That's true. That's a good point. So with your husband getting a disease, how do you guys balance that caregiver survivor? I mean, you kind of switch roles, I imagine.
We definitely did. I think ultimately it was really balancing for us.
Mm.
But I wish we could have done it in a less intense kind of way. But it's very tempting, I think, when one person in a family or in a relationship has a really serious health issue, that you sort of establish the bounds of a relationship where this is the sick person, this is the healthy person. And I was already well, but we had just the routine was that my health was the most important, and we really had to pay attention to my sleep. And it was like very much focused on keeping me as healthy as possible. And I think that some of his and some of other caregivers' needs get kind of lost in the shuffle. And so for a while there, it was a complete reversal because he was really life or death on a few occasions. And now it's balanced out again where we're both survivors, and that's a nice place to be in.
And you're both well along in your recovery process. So things are good for you too right now.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Part of his healing was really get into a lot more creative work. He had been doing life coaching, and I ended up initially taking over his practice. As he got sicker with the Lyme, then he ended up having to send some of his clients to me, and I would just do medical intuitive work with them. And one day he said to me, well, you know, I think you should be a life coach. And I said, well, why would you think that? And he said, well, because you're already coaching most of my clients. And so I ended up doing that, and he ended up getting much more involved in photography, which was something that he had always really wanted to do, and life kind of got in the way, and he had other responsibilities. Well, as he was recovering, it was the photography that I think really saved his life. He really needed to build up his strength and have something that he could really throw his passion into, and that wound up being the photography.
Mm. Isn't that interesting how exploring your creativity is a part of the healing process?
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
It's really amazing.
We can learn a lot, really a lot from that, you know, and I don't know, your message is just so inspirational. I'm so happy to have had you on the program today, Laura. I mean, we can talk and talk all day. I know you're a Reiki practitioner. You are an animal, you do animal communication as well. I mean, you are really a very amazing person, and your journey and your story is really incredible.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your website is ifionlyhadabraininjury.com.
That's my book website, and then my coaching website is internationalrenaissancecoaching.com.
Okay, great. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm working really hard to finish a couple novels that they've been in my brain. I have 12 chapters of one written and about another 13 chapters outlined, and then I've started work on another one, and so I'm really hoping to get those out soon.
Good. So here you are, you had a brain injury, and it took you to the point where you really couldn't even read, and now you're writing, you're obviously reading, and you're writing books. It's really an incredible story.
Yeah, it's definitely a turnaround, and one of those things where I think I'm writing deeper material than I ever would have written without having had the brain injury, too. Mm-hmm.
So how do you, at this point, after the brain injury and after you're well on your way on your recovery path, how do you see or experience yourself differently living now?
Well, I think the most important thing is that I realize that I'm not all the external trappings of who I thought I was, that, you know, I'm not, oh, I have a master's degree, I'm not, I'm medical intuitive, I'm not any of these labels. But even after my injury, when I had my first migraine and really thought that I was hemorrhaging and about ready to die, I realized, oh, I don't have any of these other things that I thought I was, but I'm still here. There's some underlying awareness, and that's what I've taken with me throughout the whole recovery, is realizing that even though it's been a period of rapid change, there's a part of me that never changes, that never has changed, and that is just going to stay with its awareness.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for coming on the program today, Laura. It has been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Thanks. You too.
All right, listeners. Wow, what a great, great interview. I've been talking with Laura Bruno. Her book, If I Only Had a Brain Injury, is available now. You can purchase it through her website, ifionlyhadabraininjury.com, as well as through local and online booksellers. Wonderful, inspirational self-help book. Please do check it out. There is a lot of information in here. And check out her other website, internationalrenaissancecoaching.com. Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you, listeners, so much for tuning in once again to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.